Ernest, what's up? Look, I want to put you onto something that's been making waves in the personal finance world. If you've been relying on Mint to manage your finances, I got some news that might startle you at first. Mint is no more. But hold on, because every cloud has its silver lining, and in this case, that lining is Monarch Money. For those of us searching for a robust, user-friendly alternative, Monarch Money is stepping up to the plate. And from personal experience, it's hitting a home run. Let's get personal for a moment. Managing finances can be a maze of confusion, stress, and time consumption. Believe me, I've been there, jumping from one finance app to another, hoping to find that one platform that simplifies everything. Then came Monarch Money. Its ease of use, powerful features, and sleek design transformed my approach to managing finances. What truly sets Monarch apart for me, though, is its collaboration feature. With money being a top Discord trigger for many couples, the ability to seamlessly manage finances with my wife has been a game changer. No extra costs, just shared goals and clarity. But Monarch isn't just about managing your current finances, it's about building your future. Saving for that dream house, your wedding, or a once-in-a-lifetime vacation becomes not just a possibility, but a reality with Monarch's intuitive tools. It's no wonder the Wall Street Journal held it as the best app for savings growth. Monarch Money represents the next evolution in personal finance apps. It's an ad-free haven where your experience is the priority, constantly refined based on real user feedback. It's everything we've been asking for: intuitive, powerful, and relentlessly focused on user satisfaction. Now, for a bit more practicality, Monarch makes transitioning from Mint a breeze, ensuring you can bring all your tags and categories with you. Its intuitive design, customization options, and commitment to privacy and an ad-free experience make it stand out in the sea of competitors. Look, after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/leisure. That's MONARCHMONEY.com/leisure for your extended 30-day free trial. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Ernest, what's up? Look, today I want to talk to you about something that's been on my mind, a real weight on my shoulders. You know, we all have these moments, big or small, that just stick with us. When we don't talk about these things, then they can start to affect our lives in unexpected ways. That's why having a space to express these feelings is so important. I know firsthand the benefits of therapy. It's been transformative for my friends and family. Therapy can help you learn crucial skills like setting boundaries and developing coping strategies. It's not just about dealing with major events. It's also about enhancing your day-to-day life, allowing you to become the best version of yourself. So if you've been thinking about therapy, BetterHelp can be a great option for you. It's entirely online, which makes it super convenient and adaptable to your busy schedule. You start by filling out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can even switch therapists at any time if you feel the need without any additional cost. So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/earnyourleisure today to get 10% off your first month. Remember, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/earnyourleisure. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. Head over there now.
Let's talk about the affirmative action ruling. This is something that we covered a few weeks ago, and you mentioned it. So how will that ruling, in your opinion, what's the potential impacts on the education and employment opportunities for every American? And why is that ruling so important?
So for a couple of reasons. So the most prestigious institutions in our country no longer have to take race into account as it relates to applicants coming into their schools. And because of that, those institutions are going to continue to be, they're already super white, but they're going to continue to be even more disproportionately white. So what that does, these prestigious institutions are the beacons of power in our country, not just from an education perspective, but from an economic and political perspective. So we are going to have brilliant Black and Latino students across the country who will no longer have access to these institutions because of this recent ruling. So they will no longer have access to the power centers of America. We have a bill. My office has a bill that we're reintroducing this week that says, okay, you want to end affirmative action, you need to end legacy admissions at these institutions as well. Mm-hmm. Because legacy admissions disproportionately benefit white people, white men in particular. 70% of those who benefit from legacy admissions are white people, white wealthy people. But the Supreme Court didn't deal with that because the Supreme Court is illegitimate because it takes gifts from billionaire donors who support legacy admissions in the higher education space.
Hold you. So when you say the Supreme Court is illegitimate, what is interesting? It's an interesting word. Expound on that.
There is no way to hold the Supreme Court accountable for unethical behavior. There's also no way to hold the Supreme Court accountable when it takes on a case that isn't within its jurisdiction, like the student loan case, because the case does not, the person bringing the case is not harmed by the lawsuit in which they're pursuing. There's no way for us as Congress to hold the Supreme Court accountable. So when it takes gifts from billionaire donors, it has now become a political body. We're supposed to be a body. It's supposed to be a body that acts outside of the political arena. Mm-hmm. It's also not supposed to be a body that makes policy, which is what it has done with not just this recent student loan decision, but also an EPA decision. Let me also mention what it means for the economics and jobs in our communities. There were many companies that were moving more towards diversity, equity, and inclusion, and minority hiring, and understanding the benefits of that. Now those companies do not have to do that anymore, right? And will not even look in that direction. So they will be least likely to hire African-American Latinos in certain companies. The last thing I'll say about this is this. This is why our own self-determination and building our own collective wealth and our own sovereignty matters so much. Because what we're going to see now, hopefully, is a rise in kids going to HBCUs. But what I also want to see, and I'll talk a little bit more about this, is Black enterprise growing exponentially across this country to hire more Black people and develop more workforce development programs into Black institutions to help us build historic Black wealth. And there's a political aspect to that as well.
Can I just follow one follow-up question? So what kind of gift do the Supreme Court get? You said like they get gifts from...
Yes, so Clarence Thomas had a billionaire pay his child's tuition into a private school. Clarence Thomas took trips on yachts with Republican billionaire donors. This is documented. This is fact. There were other gifts given to, I believe, Kavanaugh Roberts as well that have been documented. And so once the Supreme Court begins to take gifts, political gifts, they have lost their legitimacy as a court. And add on top of that, some of the decisions they've made recently supersede what Congress has codified into law. When you take away the Secretary of Education and the President's ability to cancel student loans as per federal law that was passed in 2003, the HEROES Act, then you are now making policy. If you're making policy, you are no longer legitimate as a court. And that's why there are so many in this country calling for Supreme Court reform. And again, the only way to get that is for every person to engage in our political process, vote, 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 so that we can hold people accountable and change the court and Congress.
That's a lot. There's a lot to unpack there, right? When we talk about job creation and we talk about the influx of potential students now going to HBCUs, one of the things that we have to combat is the technology that's going to be at those HBCUs. So I want to know your thoughts on, because we've seen the reports about what AI is going to do to the job economy, not just here domestically, but from a global standpoint. So what is your thoughts on AI and technology specifically for our community, but even at a collegiate level, what that looks like for students of color?
Well, I'm incredibly concerned because 80% of HBCUs are broadband deserts. So the broadband in their colleges don't work the same as the broadband in Harvard and the mostly white institutions. That's number one. Number two, you all are from Greenberg. You know, in this district, we also have Scarsdale and Rye and very, very wealthy communities. Those wealthy communities, in terms of their school curriculums, they've been way ahead of the game in comparison to certain schools in places like Greenberg, Mount Vernon, the Bronx, because of historic underfunding that's also a part of policy and federal law that's attributed to the redlining of our communities. So in many ways, we are already behind the eight ball in terms of funding and curriculum and resources. And now AI, if we don't like step up and do something right now, we will be even further behind the eight ball. So I'm very concerned about that. Government is not ready for this right now. There are 10 fellows in Congress who work in congressional offices focusing on the issue of AI. 10. There are 535 members of Congress. So that shows you just how behind we are. I'm lucky we got one of those fellows. So we are, you all know, I think you know, I sit on the Science, Space, and Tech Committee as well. So not just education and workforce. So we are hyper-focused on AI, and we're going to be coming out with legislation to deal with the issue of AI, because it's not just the replacement of workers in certain fields. That is an issue. And that will happen, but we need to make sure that certain workers are protected, like writers in the Writers Guild who are striking right now. And AI is one of the conversations as it relates to, you know, their new contract. But it's also about using AI, understanding AI, using it as a tool. We don't even know what's on the back end of AI in terms of its development and what biases are a part of that. So we got to get in on the ground level to understand how this technology works so we could build our own technology and then build the wealth that comes with that. So we use it as a tool, yes, absolutely, understanding it, but we also have to create the new technology in order to build the wealth we need to build. And the last thing, we still don't have comprehensive legislation when it comes to technology, social media, safety, security, privacy, none of that. We don't have that at a federal level because Zuckerberg and others have been lobbying to stay away from that because a lot of their wealth is built on their advertising dollars that they get because there's no legislation. So it's mad work to do there. And that's why we're pushing a lot of STEM education into the K-12 space and doing a lot of workforce development outside the K-12 space so that people are aware of you know, what's there and can get in on the ground floor in terms of jobs and entrepreneurship opportunities.
I'm not stating that it's right for, I don't think Clarence should be taking vacations or being on yachts with billionaires, but what's the difference between lobbying and them receiving an inducement or gifts to put a policy in place?
I mean, they're not an elected body, right? So the Supreme Court, they're unelected. They're appointed. They're appointed by the president who's elected. And the Supreme Court's role is to interpret the Constitution and hear arguments and cases in situations where the Constitution may have been violated. That is all they are there for. They are part of a system of checks and balances. The lobbying, especially when we're talking about big money lobbying, that moves us away from a democracy and moves us into a space of a dictatorship and fascism. So there was another Supreme Court case decided a few years back called Citizens United that determined that corporations are people and money is free speech. And when you have that dynamic in play, when it comes to our democracy, think about it. How many black billionaires are there? If you combine them, Jeff Bezos alone got way more money than them, like way more. So when you talk about the history of wealth inequality, if we allow wealth to dictate politics through lobbying, then those who have always had wealth and power will continue to have wealth and power. And the wealth and power was built on the backs of enslaved Africans. And so that's why we got to get big money out of politics overall, but particularly as it relates to the Supreme Court. I mean, look at the last few years' decisions alone. I mean, they made a decision that makes it easier to carry concealed weapons in states like New York. And we know the data shows that the more concealed carry permits you have, the more accidents happen related to gun violence and the more gun deaths you have overall. So big money in politics is a major, major issue. The good thing is when we talk about black wealth, it has grown a lot recently. And if it is consolidated and codified, we could exercise real power in politics from a congressional level all the way down to local school boards.
Yeah, the Supreme Court is extremely disturbing because, like you said, they're supposed to be above politics. So you can...
They're supposed to be not political. And just real quick points on that. We can't hold them accountable ethically, so we need ethics reform on the Supreme Court. They have lifetime appointments. Mm-hmm. So, like, whoever Trump appointed three people, they'll be there for the rest of their lives. That's unacceptable. And then look at the size of the Supreme Court, 9 members. They've been 9 members since 1869. Mm-hmm. The country was 30 million people there. Country's 300 million people now, 330 million people. They don't even have the capacity to hear cases in the way they need to hear cases. And so there needs to be complete Supreme Court reform, just like there needs to be complete democracy reform with the filibuster and electoral college and many other things. I mean, we're a more diverse, dynamic country than we've ever been. And that's why we got to change a lot of these things.
Can I just have a follow-up just to that, and then I'm trying to take his question, because I wonder if there was legislation that was put in place behind that, right? When we look at all of our elected officials, they all have terms, whether it's a mayor, it's the governor, it's a congressman, it's the president.
It's talking about design.
Outside of the Supreme Court.
Congressmen don't have terms, though.
We got to run every 2 years.
But
they could.
Joe Biden was a congressman for 450 years.
What I'm saying is they have to be reelected every 2 years. Re-elected. They could lose their job, right? Like the only way the Supreme Court can lose their job is if they pass away. So, what type of support do you think would be behind legislation like that puts terms on Supreme Court and increasing the number?
A lot. Like, so there's a huge disconnect between the people and members of Congress. Members of Congress are trying to maintain the status quo. And the status quo is corporate power, white wealthy male power, evangelical power, and the power of many lobbies like fossil fuels and pharmaceuticals and other lobbies. They want to maintain that power. The people want democracy reform and they want justice. The people can't understand why every time there's a mass shooting with assault rifles, and then we in Congress don't do anything about that. The people are like, what the hell is going on? They become disenchanted. Congress ain't doing shit, so I'm gonna stay home and not vote. And what I've been saying everywhere I go, I'm gonna give you just a couple quick examples. Florida, Texas, Nebraska, Missouri, Mississippi, Indiana. Mm-hmm. Who am I missing? Few other states, big Senate races this year. The biggest issue in those states, they're all Republican states, is voter turnout.
Yeah.
If we increase turnout in those states.
And suppression. Yeah.
And suppression, right? Both. If we can increase turnout in those states go from red to blue. And again, Democrats ain't perfect. But if we had a supermajority in the Senate, you would see George Floyd justice and policing. You would see something on voting rights. You will see something on reparations. You will see something on so many issues because now Senate majority leaders don't have no excuse, right? Now, the excuse now is, oh, we don't got the numbers. We got the filibuster. We don't want to go around the filibuster. If we increase the numbers, now we got to go around the filibuster. But that don't happen if we don't increase voter turnout. And that's why, like, next year is huge for this. It's huge.